Hi folks. On this episode, we speak with Kieran Warwick, co-founder of Alluvium, a video game developer and publisher of AAA play-to-earn crypto games. Alluvium's open world exploration, NFT creature collector and auto battler game is built on the Ethereum blockchain. Kieran talks to us about his sibling rivalry with his crypto bro Kane, founder of SNX, his love of gaming, and the reasons he identified blockchain as a no-brainer when it comes to advancing the inherent utility of in-game digital assets. We learn about how Alluvium plans to compete with traditional AAA games, the recent land sale, how it makes use of Layer 2 solutions to solve for scaling, and their forthcoming release plans. I hope you enjoy the show.
Please note that this podcast does not constitute financial product advice. You should consider obtaining independent advice from a financial advisor before making any financial decisions.
Kieran, thanks so much for joining me on today's show.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, I'd love you to tell our audience about your background. You know, I guess what was before Alluvium, and then we can jump into the juicy stuff.
For sure. So I've been, I guess, what you would call a serial entrepreneur, which is basically a fancy way of saying I've failed a bunch of times until this point. But I've been very interested in startups for quite some time now. My exposure to crypto began in 2016 when myself and Kane, my brother, who runs Synthetics Protocol, we decided to start the first over-the-counter Bitcoin exchange. And so you can literally walk in, hand over $1,000 and buy yourself a Bitcoin back then. Got into trading alts from there. I was very interested in Ethereum and a couple of other startups in the space that were doing ICOs. And I started trading. I loved it, but I got wrecked on Ethereum early on. And so I actually ended up leaving and I founded a food tech startup that lasted a few years. We ended up getting a partnership with DoorDash. But by that time, basically, the COVID had hit pretty heavily and it did not help us. And so I decided to jump back into crypto.
Yeah, well, swings and roundabouts, right? And it sounds like you've been on a couple. Obviously, I've had a bit to do with Kane over the years. Mm-hmm. He was on the show as well. And he's talked to us a little bit about Synthetics and the kind of history there. Were you involved with Haven at all?
The only involvement that I had is that I raised $500,000 maybe of their round. And he said to me, you know, I'm quite interested in capital raising. I find it really fun. And so he knew that I had a bit of a network. And so he asked me to go out and raise some money for him. But that was about it.
Yeah, right. Okay, cool. Okay, so then you return to crypto. That's a really interesting story, because a lot of people come in at different points in time and stay in or leave for good. So it's really interesting that you've kind of you left and you've come back. So what brought you back? What was the thing that was interesting to you again? Tell me about, I guess, the seeds, the kernel that became Alluvium.
Yeah, so Kane and I are very, very competitive, but there's 9 years difference in age between us, but we're very, now that we're both, you know, like growing up, he had a massive advantage in that he was older, but now that it's evening out, it's leveled the playing field a bit. And it was basically him who sort of antagonized me into it by saying he was like, Synthetics had just started taking off when I got back into it, or it had been going strong for about 9 months or so. And we're in the car, and I remember it still to this day. It's like 2 years ago now. And he turned to me and he said, yeah, you know, like, even if you do well, you know, you'll never be able to catch me now. And I'm like, and I was like, no, mate. I was like, nah, I do not accept that. And it made me start racking my brain. Like the COVID situation with my food tech startup had hit. And I was sort of thinking, I've got to do something else anyway. And that was the trigger point where I thought, you know what? Why don't I just beat him at his own game?
Nothing like a bit of sibling rivalry, hey? Well, that's cool. Okay, well, let's dive into the project then, because it's really, really interesting. It's on fire in a good way, not a bin fire, like a proper on fire emoji on fire. And, you know, something that I've been following. It's really interesting to me. And were you a gamer?
Yeah, I've been a gamer pretty much my entire life. Like our dad had us on the computers very, very early on. And so naturally, we being so competitive, as soon as we found video games and how competitive they could be, all four of us brothers just played. Like there's so many games that we played growing up. So yeah, pretty much a gamer all my life.
Any favorites, anything worth mentioning?
EverQuest was the first, I don't know if it was I think maybe Diablo came out before that, but EverQuest was the first MMO that I certainly got into and like our family got into. And I remember we literally had to, like there's four of us and there was only a single PC that we had, or Mac that we had. And it was a PC. Sorry, we begged and we got a PC. But we used to segment up our time, and like the older brothers got a little bit, they got hour slots and we got 30 minute slots. and we got to a point where our dad basically had to ban us from that game because it was so addictive.
Yeah. Guess what? I think parents are still out there banning kids from games. So nothing's changed. I grew up playing games. Maybe I'm more Kane's vintage, but I think that there's like a real soft spot for me for games, even though I have very little time to play them right now. I have this kind of like imaginary life in which I'm able to play lots of games still.
Yeah,
no, I kind of watch that alternate me through the looking glass every now and then.
Yeah, it's sort of it's laying dormant in all of us. I was kind of the same, you know, like for the last 10 years. I'm trying to build businesses, it's not really conducive with being able to game pretty much all day. So it's agreed. Good to be able to get back and play my own game and not feel guilty.
Yeah, that's amazing. Okay, well, tell me about this game.
Yeah, so it's basically, like, keeping it really simple, it's kind of an amalgamation of Teamfight Tactics, which is an auto battler style of game, and Pokemon. And so you have this open world exploration where there's seven different regions for you to go and uncover. And your job as a ranger crash landing on this planet is to go around and figure out what happened. Why is the planet like this? What are these creatures that we call alluvials? And why are you a ranger that has to go around and capture these things and then battle them against other players? Like, what is the reason for all of this?
So there's like an end game in Alluvium?
Yeah. The idea is that you beat the game, but at the same, in terms of the story part, yes. But in terms of the auto battler, and like the ranked battles, that's something that is more akin to like esports, where you can always play. You can always go into that competitive scene, but then if you want to go through and do the story mode, then that's going through the overworld.
That's cool. So you can play in a story mode, and when you do that, are you playing with other human characters at the same time, or are you experiencing that yourself and then you're playing other human characters when you're battling?
Correct. Yeah, so you're in your own sequence, you're in your own world, and you're going through and you're capturing the creatures, and then the PvP side of it starts when you go into the arena and you start battling people.
Okay, cool. So it feels like we've scratched the surface a little bit. Can you kind of like zoom out and give me the story about Alluvium? And I guess the thing that's
One of the things that's different about Alluvium from my perspective is that, you know, you're using NFTs, you're using crypto in the back end of this game. Talk to me about that and where you landed with some of the decisions that you've made around this and what you think it brings.
Yeah, so the underlying technology is what really drew me into this space. Like the ability for gamers to own their assets and have the option to go and sell them on a marketplace is really, really what drew me in to the space. But the thing that is lacking is the quality of games that people are used to in the mainstream. And so the analogy that I give, or the situation that I give, is imagine if you were able to go out and play Pokemon or Pokemon Go, even, because that's the most recent version. You could literally go out into the world and capture these things, but the IP is owned by Niantic, the publisher of Pokemon. And so you can go and capture the rarest Pokemon in the world that has amazing stats. It's like perfect, and it does nothing for you, right? You don't own that. You can't sell that. And so what we're doing differently and how we integrate NFTs is when you capture an alluvial, which is our Pokemon equivalent, that is your property. You own that and no one can take that away from you. And that's kind of what has been a gripe for many, many years in a bunch of different marketplaces, where gamers say, well, look, I've invested $2,000 into this and or $3,000 or $10,000 or whatever crazy amounts it is.
Plus hours, yeah.
Plus hours, right? Like, which is arguably more valuable to these people. And they have other people that are willing to purchase that, right? They see the value. Hey, you went and grinded 20 hours a day for, let's hope not that much, but, you know, like, these people are building up their war chest inside this game, and effectively it has no value, no real world value. That's what we're changing. In our game, you can sell those characters, you can trade them, you can gift them to people. It's a free open market.
So how do you enable that? Why haven't some of the big, you know, developers gone this way yet?
Well, I mean, it's an interesting situation, because we're the first fully decentralized AAA studio. And so what that means is we take that DeFi approach to the project, and it's literally a situation where, instead of it being a corporate owned entity, it's owned by the community, right? And we actually display that by distributing 100% of revenues back to the people that are staked in the protocol. And so it's this whole paradigm shift that gamers need to start understanding, which is giving the power and the revenues back to the people who are playing the game, right? It's shifting that. And I think the reason why Web2 games are hesitant to do this is it probably means giving away a bunch of their revenues. But the way that we see it is, yes, we're giving, we distribute the revenue back to the people in the community and the stakers and the investors and whatever. But we think the network effects of that will mean that we will actually, the business will actually make more in the long run, because we'll have so many more players that love this system, where it's like, hey, this isn't just some corporate entity that is receiving hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue for like skins and stuff like that. This is a situation where all of the revenues get distributed back to the people who are actually playing the game.
That's fascinating. So not only can you own your artifacts and any assets that you kind of build up while playing, as someone who then, and correct me if I'm wrong here, you know, the Alluvium the game, you have your own token, and that token represent that will accrue and distribute revenues that are generated by trading or selling of assets in the game back through to people who are holding that token. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. That's really fascinating. Okay. So I've had Robbie Ferguson from IMX on this show. I noticed that on your platform, because you've just done a land sale. I'd like you to tell me about that land sale. And I noticed that you guys are using IMX. Can you tell me about, you know, that, how that went, what the land sale was all about, like what you were trying to achieve there and what occurred, and also how you executed that?
Yeah, so the land sale, we needed to sell plots of land for our companion game, Alluvium Zero. So that's a mobile idle clicker city builder type game, similar to like a Sim City back in the day. And essentially what you're doing on those land plots is you're extracting fuel, and that fuel is what is used in the main game to power transactions. So things like traveling, capturing alluvials, any sort of crafting fees, all of that takes fuel. And so the landowners have a very, very important role in providing that fuel to be purchased by the players of the main game. So we get this, it starts to get pretty complex, but you get this real world economy across both sides, where you've got the landowners who are trying to produce the different types of fuel, and you've got the players who are consuming those different types of fuel. And depending on the supply and demand at the time, that will that has an effect on the in-game pricing. So one day you might be traveling and it costs you $10. The next day you're traveling, and because there's been a huge resource dump onto that pool, all of a sudden it's way, way cheaper for you to go and purchase that fuel and travel. And so that's in a nutshell what Alluvium Zero is, and that's why we needed to sell those plots. Obviously, we didn't want to follow in the same path as some previous NFT sales that have been done on Layer 1. And we're launching our main product on IMX anyway. And so we thought, rather than sell these land plots on Layer 1, let's move to IMX now. And we did so. And it was incredible, the savings that we had. I estimate that we saved about 60% purely in gas costs, purely from using the IMX solution to mint.
That's great. Great to see that being deployed live. It was a really interesting chat I had with the Immutable X guys, and anyone who's listening can go back and have a listen to that for sure, because it ties in really neatly to this chat. Okay, so you know, gas costs are really a problem across the whole space, irrespective of whether you're, you know, trading or buying NFTs or playing games. That has been one of the big reasons that I think games have found it hard to scale. And so it's obvious why you've used IMX. But what about some of the other, user experience issues? So have you guys done any testing, and what's your feedback so far in terms of people who are playing the game and actually having to spend money to play a game? Because I know you spend money to play games in like Web 2, but from the sounds of things, it sounds like there's going to be more flow, like you're going to be kind of more incremental spend as you play a game like Alluvium.
Yeah, so we've got people playing the survival mode right now, which is a cut down version of the auto battler, which was the arena that I was talking about earlier. And the feedback has been amazing. Like it's been really, really, really good. And I mean, I kind of say it's like cheating, because we're launching, and if we were up against Web 2 games, it would probably be a 7 out of 10, right? From feedback from people. And I'm confident about that, and I'm realistic as well. Maybe a 6.5, right? Like, it's our first release. It's a beta. It's got some bugs, so I would be okay with that. But the fact that we are launching in a space that is very much in its infancy, and I mean, you can see the different titles that are available now, the feedback has been overwhelming, like to the point where it's not even realistic. And it's because people have been waiting so long in this space, like 2-3 years, to get a title that can actually compete with the likes of mainstream games. And so yeah, we've done that now, and the feedback is really good. And in terms of, no one is paying yet, so it hasn't been connected up to the blockchain, but when it does, we've introduced a free-to-play version of the game, and there's like 35 different alluvials for you to catch. So it's not like we're saying, all right, you've got two characters that you can go into this region into the overworld and you're going to hate it. But hey, we're able to say that we've got a free-to-play element of the game. No, like this is a proper experience for you to go in and test out the battling system, test out capturing alluvials, test out if you even like the look of the art and the feel and everything like that. Like another thing that we did not want to do is say, hey, it costs you $1,000 to start playing our game. Like it's just,
that's a horror show, right? I mean, there's a lot of criticism in the, and I'm an outsider here, you know, I don't come from the gaming world, but watching the, you know, Twitter and people talking online about gaming and even reading articles from gaming magazines, people seem to be pretty, you know, nervous at best about games that use blockchain because they're worried about the costs, right? And they're worried about the idea of scarcity in gaming, which is, you know, I guess there's definitely scarcity in games, but the expectation is that there's you know, an infinite amount of possibility in gaming, and people get nervous about the idea of scarcity in games. And how have you guys been finding that kind of feedback and pushback? Are you engaged in that conversation online, and what's your view on this?
Look, I mean, the gaming industry, the Web2 gaming industry right now is frustrated because a lot of the capital flow just went to Web3 games. And so you've got these Web2 builders that are sitting there saying, like, we make fantastic games. We've proven that for the last 10, 20 years. Yeah. And just because we don't have NFTs doesn't mean that it's not a good game. And like, and to be honest, I don't blame them, right? Because when you look at the games that where the capital is flowing to, it's like, what about us? You know, like we're the one, like these games are 20 years back, right? Like we were building these back in, you know, early 2000s. So
yeah, it's retrograde. And
it's this transition period where we're seeing a small portion of those devs come to Web3 and go, you know what? If you can't beat them, join them. We'll just make good games here and we'll utilize NFTs. And that's a very, very small percentage. A lot of them are steadfast, right? And they're sitting there and they're saying, nope, we are not moving. Like we're staying true to gaming. And what that's doing is all of their followers, all of the people that have been playing their games for decades now are saying, hey, that person that I follow, that I trust, is saying that NFTs are bad, and it's not actually because of the technology, right? Like immutable is already carbon neutral. Like that's just noise that's around the fact that capital is as transferred and it's gone over to Web3 because there are investors who genuinely think that this is going to be the next wave. It's like subscription gaming. When that came out, it was the exact same thing. People freaked out and then everyone started doing it. And so the investors jump first, and I think over time that 90% will slowly trickle across, and with it will be their followers. And it's not like people are like, we hate these publishers of Web3. They're just going with what they know right now and what their sort of leaders in the space are saying. But I think it's only a matter of time before that breaks down.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think the time right now, it is so experimental. Like, so I could see why there's been, you know, pushback and nervousness and kind of just reticence, really. People don't like new stuff. Well, it's sounding really promising. So I guess what would be cool for you to tell me a little bit about is just what's coming. I know you've just had the land sale. What are the next? So you've got a different version of the games rolling out. Can you tell us a little bit about timeframes in terms of what your expectations are for releases and also, I guess, where you want to take the game? Like, how broad does this go once you've made this release? Do you have ideas about, you know, other applications for Alluvium?
Mm-hmm. So the next thing that will be released is Alluvium Zero, the alpha, so the actual game where you can play on the land. That will be released sometime in the next 4 to 6 weeks. Then just after that, we'll have Alluvitars, which is our PFP project, where you essentially build up your own in-game avatar using things like items that you get from in-game and stuff like that. So that's like a little side-ish project for people to get involved in. Then later on in the year, that's when we'll have our release of the Overworld, which I think a lot of people are waiting on. That's where you essentially go out and capture the alluvials.
So that's your open world game. Yeah.
Yeah. The open world. And in between that, we've got a whole bunch of stuff in terms of like beta 2, which it gives you a few more characters inside the beta that's going on right now. There's a few more features. And so it's probably going to be a very modular rollout.
Cool. Well, there's lots coming and lots of exciting stuff to see play on. So I think probably the perfect time to close off the show. Thanks so much, Kieran, for sharing, you know, your insight into this, to your experience and also this space. It's really exciting and really pumped to see all this stuff roll out.
No worries, Jonathan. Thanks again for having me on.
Thanks everyone for joining me on this show and for tuning in. Make sure you subscribe and review on your podcast platform of choice, and we'll make sure we take you right to the edge of the crypto frontier. And remember, you can learn more about all things crypto by visiting kraken.com/learn. Until next time, I've been Jonathan Miller, and this has been the Crypto Frontier.